The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, number 70 for September 18th, 2006.
Greetings, folks. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave, this is John, and we're here once again on a Monday night for us. It's certainly not Monday night for you, although I guess it might be, right, John?
It may be.
It could be. They could listen on Monday night. You could listen. I mean, by they, I was just talking to John. I wasn't talking to you. So, you know what I mean. So, as we promised you, for the last couple of weeks, John and I have been culling our lists of new applications that we have found and stumbled upon in our travels, both professionally for the show and then just personally to keep our Macs running and doing the things that we like to do. So, these are apps that are new to us, not necessarily new, but we always get requests for, you know, what programs are you using to do X, Y, or Z via email. And so we figured, what the heck, we'll just put a show together.
Yeah. Oh, we do?
Yeah, of course we do. And you can send email into MacGeekGab at MacObserver.com, of course. So, and then we've got some other questions from you folks and the other folks out there. And I think that's what we'll do.
And we have answers.
And we do have answers.
Maybe not the right answers, but we have answers. Okay.
You want to get us started, John, and tell us about your first app of the evening here?
Okay. Well, this is something that just anybody can support, I think. Well, just about. But it's called Democracy.
Aha.
And, you know, everybody loves Democracy. But basically, I stumbled across this quite by accident because I believe what I was looking for, and this could be another topic at some point, I believe I was out there looking for a player for Flash files.
Okay.
FLV files.
Oh, I see.
And okay. So, you know, I was poking around, and, you know, one of the sites that I like to find new goodies is Mac Update, though there's certainly some others.
Yeah.
Version Tracker. And I came across this thing, and it's like, Democracy Player, open source, internet TV, TiVo-like. And I'm like, well, that sounds pretty darn cool.
Okay.
So I downloaded it, and it has a number of really neat features. So the one thing, of course, you know, first and foremost, it's a video playing platform. But the other nice thing is that it's open source, and I'm all about open source.
Absolutely.
And a lot of things that I'm going to talk about tonight are, for one reason or another, they just happen to be open source.
Cool.
So that's always a good thing. And
that is.
You know, if you want to, you know, geek out and get Xcode and, you know, dig around and just, you know, tweak it and contribute to the open source community, you can do such a thing.
So do you need Xcode to run this Democracy Player or no?
Oh, no, of course
not. Okay.
So what
types of content are we talking about? I mean, you're not getting CBS and ABC TV shows in here, of course, right? Or are you?
So we're not talking, you know, like, you know, so it's not like a iTunes,
right,
where, you know, you're talking commercial programs and purchase. Everything, you know, in the spirit of the open source movement is free, of course. With the player, they also offer a broadcaster, which you, if you own a server, you can plug in a couple of, I believe it's a Perl script file on your server, or from what I saw, I haven't actually tried it, but they also offer, if you'd like to host, that they recommend servers where you can also host your video.
But, wow.
But basically what you get here is you get the player. The player lets you, it has a channel guide, you know, so kind of similar to what you have in iTunes.
Okay.
And they're under certain categories. I'm looking right now, and you can get the channels that they have right now, about 600 channels.
Okay.
And they're spread across I'm looking here, animation, arts, business, comedy, Creative Commons. I believe there's a politics. So there's, and actually right down here, politics, religion and spirituality, something for just about anybody.
How long are the shows that you're watching on this thing? I mean, obviously they range, but I mean, are we talking about mostly 5-minute shows, mostly hour-long shows? What I mean,
you know, it really depends.
Okay.
It depends on the publisher. So it could be long things, could be short little things. But what's really interesting is that you can set it to be almost like a little TiVo.
Really?
So if you have it running, and you know, every now and then, very similar to like downloading podcasts with iTunes, it'll go out and check the channel, which I believe is, you know, just an RSS feed like most people are doing with with their video and audio content. It'll just pull down. So they recommend, cool. And actually during the installation, they say, you know, would you like it to kind of hang out in the background and look for new things? But if not, when you start it up, it can check the channels and download the new videos for cool. you. So it's a really neat little, again, it's kind of like a TiVo. It just kind of hangs out. We'll check for your videos. And, you know, there are just so many different channels.
Cool.
I'm looking right here. They have Democracy Now. They have Tunes. They have one here, which I got to sign up to, Puking Dogs Video of the Day. I mean,
wow, how can you miss that? That's right. That's boy, that's the first thing I'd watch when I got to my desk in the morning. In fact, I'd do it at home. That really, you know, I'd wake up before I even got up to kids. I'd go down and that'd be the way to start my day.
Now, another interesting thing about this, though, which iTunes does not have, it is that it can tie into BitTorrent.
Okay. Okay.
And that seems to be one of the nicer features. And yep. I know you and I have talked in the past that wouldn't that be a swell thing
for
iTunes to support, and you know, especially when you're crunched for bandwidth.
Right.
Wouldn't it be nice to be able to tie into BitTorrent? And so they claim to be able to do that.
Cool.
I think it's
Democracy Player, huh? At getdemocracy.com, is that right? I have that right?
Yep, we're definitely going to put it in the show notes. And they also have the...
I already put it in the show notes.
Very nice. And they also have a complimentary thing that I mentioned called Broadcast Machine.
Got it.
Which you install if you'd like to, you know, code up your, you know, do your own broadcast channels. All you need is a server. And the final thing about it is it lets you search Yahoo, YouTube, and Google Video.
Oh, see, now that's so key. That's the first thing you should have told me, because that's awesome. Oh, that's great. Very cool. Very
now,
cool.
Sometimes it may be in a format that you can't digest, you know.
Okay, okay.
But having a search that goes across, you know, the most popular video serving platforms I know, especially YouTube. I don't know if you heard the news about YouTube today, but I believe they hooked up, was it Warner?
Yeah, Warner Music.
And apparently Warner thinks, gee, you know, if there are 100 million or so videos per day that people are looking at, maybe we want to get in on this action because... not everybody's going to pay us for content or license, but maybe one or two or 1,000 or 10,000 will. So I think it's pretty smart of them.
Very cool. Very cool.
So.
All right. So my first one, I scratched off the list and moved on to its alternate. Well, not really its alternate, just the next one on the list, because the first one is something I really want to tell everybody about, but if it doesn't work, I can't tell you about it. So my first one is Disc Cover from the folks at Beelight Software. And yeah, they are the folks that actually advertised on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Were it not for them advertising on the show, I never would have stumbled onto Disc Cover. Frankly, I never knew what Beelight Software did. It never registered with me. I guess the name just didn't cause me to go seek it out. But what Disc Cover does is it's an environment in which you develop and assemble CD labels. So if you're in a band, or if you're archiving stuff, or if you're creating photo CDs or DVDs, of course, from any of your content, and you want to give these out, say, as Christmas gifts, or you want to just simply have a label to stick on something and put it away in your archive, it does it all. It's got pictures built into it. Obviously, it goes and supports all of the Avery label sets that are available, and every other brand as well. But I kind of stumbled onto this thing, and it pulls in data from all the iApps. So you can, if you want to build a CD label with all the track names on it, bam, it's right there. You don't have to go and type them in manually. Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's you know, it almost feels like an extension to the whole iLife suite in terms of, well, creating disc labels, hence the name Disc Cover. So
okay. And people like Avery and others offer circular labels. Have you seen any like transparent ones or
You know, I haven't looked, but it wouldn't surprise me if they have transparent ones, although that would get a little weird. I guess you'd have to make sure you bought media that was that had no branding on it, right? Because otherwise, the transparent ones would look kind of funky on the on media that had, you know, a brand name underneath it or whatever.
Okay. Now, does it do just the disc label, or can you do like the insert?
Yeah, you can make inserts as well. So yeah, it'll do the whole deal for you.
Oh.
I like
Very
it.
Very nice.
Yeah. 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 And it's got, you know, it's got some clip art built in. Obviously, you can pull in your own, you know, if you've got an image of your, let's say you're in a band and you want to, you know, put a CD together, you can take a picture of the band and make that the background of the image and pull your logo in and all that good stuff. And obviously, you could do that with the family, too. And you could take a picture from iPhoto. If you, if let's say you're building an iPhoto library CD, you could take, you know, your favorite picture of the set and make that the background for the label, and you're good to go. So very cool.
Hey, you're in, yeah. You do the band thing. Maybe you should.
I do. Maybe I should. Got to find the right band first. But that's another issue. So we'll move on. So that's a disc cover from BeLightSoftware.com. And of course that's in the show notes too. So what's your next one, John?
Okay. And actually I came across this because, the one we're going to talk about next is from the same vendor, but, we'll talk about this now. Our buddies at panic.com. There's something here called Unison. What is Unison? Unison is a news reader.
Okay.
John, what are you saying? A newsreader? I go to Google News and all that. I read the news.
I go to MacObserver.com to get my news.
Well, of course. Mac News.
That's right. Yeah.
Anyways. But basically what this is, and this is something, you know, which the newer people in the computing world and, you know, newer Mac users may not be aware of, but this is something that was back in the bad old days of text only before web browsers and all that.
Yeah.
There was something called Usenet. And actually, I used to run a news server at the day job until it became, you know, kind of a pain in the neck to run.
Yeah.
But basically, it's a threaded discussion system that's pretty much worldwide. Almost any internet provider, including the one that I'm with, Opt Online, fortunately offers a news server. And, you know, if you've used a bulletin board or a discussion group, it's very similar to that.
Yeah.
You have groups with names. And the first thing that I like about this is that when you start it up, it's smart enough to kind of poke around and say, you know what? As far as I can tell, you have, so it detects your, you know, what provider you're with. And it says,
really?
You know, yeah. So it came up and
cool.
It said, hey, you know, you may want to go to news.optonline.net and they probably have a news server there. And yes, they did.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great.
So that's a nice
to
touch.
That. So tell the people a little bit about, and this isn't app specific, but what sort of news, if someone's never used Usenet before, what sort of news could they get with this?
You
what
know,
sort of
it's
discussions,
all over
rather?
The place.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of major hierarchies that I would say, and then they break down and pretty much the groups have a name.
Yeah. What are some of your
the
favorite
high
groups?
Level.
So just list a couple so that people can get the gist, right?
Well, I would say comp.
Comp.
And let me just make sure I get the name right. So comp means computer.
Right.
Let's see. It's sys, I believe.
Yes, comp sys.
Mac.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. So they're all separated by periods, and this system is pretty much all text, though you can do non-text. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Yeah.
But, for example, the one that I like is comp.sys.mac.advocacy.
Okay.
Oh my. You want to talk about a news group that has a lot of traffic?
Yeah.
I'm looking here right now, and that particular group right now currently has 120,000 messages in it.
Okay. Okay.
So if you want to be a Mac advocate, this is the group to do it with. So basically, it lets you search. So the first thing that happens when you go to the news server, whoever offers it to you, and actually these guys offer one if your internet provider doesn't offer one, they will give you one to hook up to.
Sure.
And you double click on it. It'll let you search by name. And then it lists all the messages in a nice hierarchy. If there are messages that are part of a thread or a certain topic, it will list them.
Kind of
that
like,
way as well.
Kind of like Mail app will do if you've got threading turned on in it for those of you that are looking for an analog there. Yeah.
And it's also smart enough to pick up if you have it configured elsewhere in Mac OS X, it'll, you know, put your email address, because when you post a message, either an original message or reply to something else, it'll put your email address, though I have a caution here. You probably don't want to put your real email address in the field that asks for it, because this the one downside of Usenet, it is a spam magnet.
Yeah.
If you put a message in there with your real email address, you will guaranteed 100% you will start getting an email box full of garbage. So what a lot of people do is they will typically put either a bogus address in there, or somewhere within the message they will put something in there that a email address harvester cannot pick up.
Hopefully cannot pick up.
Yeah, like you spell out, you know, the word at.
Yeah.
Or put some text in there, something that an automated harvester cannot parse.
Yeah.
And then it also very nicely, if you know, if you go into a discussion and it's a discussion that has, you know, prior comments and stuff like that, it'll display them very nicely in color, showing you, you know, the you know, reply from this person, this person, this person. So it makes it very easy to follow the sequence of replies from a certain person. It also has a little rule system. So, for example, you could ignore posts from certain people and things like that.
And the interface is though the conversation is all text, the interface is very OS X and
absolutely
Aqua-E, right, and all that good stuff. Cool. And that's from Panic Software, right?
Mm-hmm. And okay. The other thing you can do with it, there are some groups, depending on the topic, that offer binaries. Because, as I mentioned, Usenet is something that does text, 7-bit only. Of course, there are ways to encode binary data like pictures and stuff like that. And if it detects that, you know, a certain message has something that's a binary file, there'll be a little download button where you can download something. So it's also a nice way to get binary information communicated via a text channel. But a very nice news reader. It's still very, very active. They're just, I'm looking here, just a boatload of messages put up today.
So I still use Usenet to track information on bands that I'm interested in, because there's still a lot of activity out there. When Phish was, in fact, even now that Phish isn't an active band, there's still a ton of stuff on the Phish news group, and REM's news group has a lot of stuff, as does as Rush's, and it's actually a really good place to go and find news if your favorite band has a news group out there, because those people just keep talking and talking and talking. So, and that's from Panic Software, Unison from Panic Software. Interestingly enough, on my list, I had Transmit from Panic Software. Transmit is an FTP client, and FTP means file transfer protocol, or a way of uploading files from your computer to another, or pulling files from your from another computer down to yours. And there's a lot of FTP clients. In fact, there's one built right into the OS X command line. If you don't want to use the command line, I really, really like Transmit. It's got a whole bookmarking feature set in there, so you don't have to remember your passwords. Obviously, it uses the system keychain. And the one very cool thing is it allows you to create droplets. So if there is a place that you're constantly uploading files, let's say you've got a server where you're putting web documents, or you know, if you're hosting picture files and you're for a client or something, and you're constantly uploading stuff and telling people to go get it from your FTP server, you can create a droplet that is a quick shortcut to whatever folder you specify on your FTP server, and then you can put that droplet right into your dock and just drag files down to it, and it automatically logs in. You can tell it to save your password, so that bam, you drop the file on there and up it goes. On top of that, it's Automator savvy, so you can totally script the thing with Automator, and in fact, it's what I use as part of the Automator workflow that I created to process and upload the show. So it just, bam, automatically goes. No intermediate step required. I don't even think about it. The only time I know it's there for the show anyway is when it tells me there's an update to the software, because then it pesters me about it. So Transmit.
As it should be.
As it should be, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I see a few other things here. I think it'll deal with web dev volumes, iDisk. Mm-hmm.
It will. That's right. It'll let you upload and download to and from your iDisk, and it really manages that process in a way that is better than what the Finder does. It doesn't tie up your machine nearly as much. So I think that's it's a very, very nice app. Again, from Panic Software, the same folks that make Unison, the newsreader we just talked about.
Very nice. Now, do you know about Growl?
I do know about Growl. I haven't used Growl. Is that the next one on your list or no?
No. This mentions that it supports it. I just threw a random question out there because I see it supports it. I think it's some notification system.
It's exactly what it is. It's a system that can notify you of many different things happening on your Mac. There's sort of, it's an open API, and there's plugins for all sorts of different applications. I don't use it, so I'm sure someone out there is listening to our uninformed description of what this is and cringing, but it'll allow you to do some cool things. You can get notifications floating on your screen when things happen, and if you have a PowerMate, one of those little blue glowing things, the paddle wheel. It'll glow that thing if certain actions happen, and very configurable from what I understand. So that's Growl. So that's a twofer right there. Transmit and Growl, although Panic doesn't make Growl. Someone else does.
Okay. Well, that droplet thing I especially like. I think the next show that we go to.
Yeah.
Because that was always a challenge I had, uploading content to, to the site, like pictures. Though actually, we got some nice tools in place here. But just having a drag and drop interface to upload files is nice, because who wants to deal with the command line?
No.
I don't.
It's not.
And speaking.
Yes.
Of not wanting to deal with a command line.
Yes.
That almost segues into our next little goodie here.
There's a reason I built it. There's a reason I built the agenda this way, This isn't by accident.
That's why you get the big bucks.
That's right.
So.
What is it? Tell us. Tell us. What's the name of it? What's it called? Tell me.
It is called Fugu.
Don't say that. Oh,
I can say that. F-U-G-U.
Hey,
Fugu. F-U-G-U.
And what's it do?
Fugu is this? I think it's the part of the puffer fish that isn't poisonous, and it's a delicacy in some areas. But you got to be careful, because if you eat the wrong part of the puffer fish, you're gonna expire very quickly.
But if you eat the right part of the puffer fish, it transfers files for you. Is that what you're about to tell
pretty
me?
Pretty much. That's it. No.
Okay.
So anyways, what's Fugu? So Fugu, again, I told you I'm all about open source. So Fugu is a very nice open source front end to some of the services that have command line client. But, we were just saying, the command line and the terminal, you don't want to mess with that. That's just terrible.
Right.
So what Fugu does is basically offers you a very nice GUI to a number of services. And I think the highlighted one here, and actually I believe Transmit will do this also.
Yeah.
This does a few other things. It provides you a nice graphical shell to the SFTP that is otherwise a command line thing included in OS X.
Okay, so SFTP, just to wrap the discussion together, is Secure File Transfer Protocol. And yes, Transmit also supports that, but go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because and why would you need Secure FTP, do you ask? Well, like a lot of other protocols, when they were originally developed, they weren't secure, and basically FTP, everything is sent out in the open, which may be something you do not want.
That's right.
Especially on an open or a public network. So it provides you a nice graphical shell that will let you connect without using the built-in, it uses the built-in part of OS X, but it gives you a nice graphical shell which will ask you for the server, username, port, directory, a few other things there. And on the left side of the screen here, it gives you a nice view of your directory hierarchy on your Mac.
Very cool.
So that is one thing that it does, and it also does two other things. There's also another secure option here that it lets you front-end, which is SCP, or Secure Copy.
Yep.
And I think we talked about that in a past show as well. So very similar, Unix has a nice copy command. There's a secure version as well, so people are not snooping and watching the files that you are copying. And it also provides you a SSH graphical interface to define yourself a nice little SSH tunnel, which we've talked about in the past as well.
Okay.
So again, I'm all about open source.
It is important to note that if you are connecting to an FTP server, just because you can connect using FTP does not mean that you can connect using SFTP. Because SFTP does not use the FTP protocol. It kind of does, but it tunnels it over SSH. And so that it's an important distinction there, because there are some FTP servers, probably a lot of them out there, that don't support SFTP in the same way that they support FTP. So,
yeah. And I think that's why it has an option here when you connect, ask for the port as well. Because I don't know maybe there isn't a standard SFTP port.
Well, maybe. I believe it uses 22.
No, it's doing.
It connects over SSH using port 22, I believe.
Okay, right.
But I could be wrong about that. But yeah, I don't believe I am.
But a lot of these services, you can put them at different ports. I mean, there are standard ports but a lot of these server file transfer and other services, if you really want to and you had a good reason, you could put them on another port.
Yeah.
So Fugu, and I got it right this time, because I remember one of our early podcasts, you remember, I called it Fubu.
Fubu, no, it's Fugu, that's right.
And the thing is, I mean, and I'm all about fashion, and I regularly wear Fugu. tire.
I know that's why you got confused, John. No, all right. So the next thing on my list is a piece of software that's very new to the world. I think everything that we've discussed so far has been a universal binary, meaning that it'll run natively on either the original or previous PowerPC Macs and also the new Intel-based Macs. Mm-hmm. This app that I'm going to talk about here is actually not a universal binary. It only runs on the Intel-based Macs, and it's called Crossover. Now, you've probably all heard about Parallels Desktop. Parallels is, we've discussed it on the show. And what Parallels does is it lets you run Windows on your Mac. Now, as far as functionality goes, it's very similar to Virtual PC, as far as the user experience is, rather, because you boot up a copy of Windows in a shell or in a window on your Mac, and within that you run all your Windows stuff, and it's pretty much isolated from the system. You can copy things in and out, but it's its own little environment happening. That's Parallels. Crossover, what it does is it lets you run Windows apps without running Windows. Now, this is very cool because, and what I've used it for, it isn't anything great, but we've been doing some design tweaks, and I want to make sure that the websites work with Internet Explorer on Windows. And so I could run Parallels and just fire that up and check it there, and I certainly have done that, but I can now run with Crossover, and it's in beta, and there are many apps that do not work with it. But Internet Explorer, obviously, is one of them. So I can run Internet Explorer just as it, the way it appears is almost as though it's another browser on my Mac. There's no Windows subsystem or anything that's apparent to me as a user. And I can just drag the Windows around. The icon for IE appears in my dock. It will get to the point where the user has no idea whether they're running a Windows app or a Mac app. And remember, none of it is emulated, right? The code of the app is running natively because it's all built for Intel. What is emulated are the toolbox calls. And it's using a Linux, it's using a piece of software that was made very popular on the Linux platform called Wine, which is Wine is not an emulator. Because it's not an emulator. It just allows you to run Windows stuff in... It's effectively an ex-Windows subsystem that's sort of bundled into this app called Crossover from CodeWeavers. Yeah.
All right. So to be clear, Virtual PC and its ilk is basically looking like an Intel processor.
Virtual PC is emulating an Intel processor, right? And does not run... Right? Does not run on the Intel Macs. Virtual PC never will run on the Intel Macs.
Well, that makes sense that they decided not to do that.
Yes. Yes.
What's the point? So this is intercepting, I would say. So whereas you have the emulator like Virtual PC, which is really duplicating the behavior of PC at a very, very low fundamental level, this is at a higher level because one would assume that, like you spoke of X-Window, is most operating systems, the calls to do certain things like to draw a window and to, you know, display colors and text and stuff, there's probably calls that are fairly similar across different operating systems and environments. Now, I guess the downside is that it's not going to run everything.
That's correct. And some the apps, app if does they need do, to be tweaked. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have an application that doesn't follow or does, you know, little tricks to get performance and stuff, you may have some problems using a product like this. So the good news is that if an application, like I see here, some of the ones, like they say they run Microsoft Visio, one would assume, I think, that it Microsoft does. Pretty much follows their own guidelines when...
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
When they're running software. Yeah. So I guess the only downside is that you're not going to be able to run... Whereas Virtual PC, I would say, you can pretty much run everything, albeit slowly.
That's right. That's right.
You can pretty much run everything.
And the same is true with Parallels. Parallels, because it's simulating the Windows... A Windows machine at the very low level, it's far more compatible with applications than Crossover is, at least currently. So,
wow. So, you know, you make it to the point where who needs a PC?
That's right. You pick your operating system and go. The applications could run independently of what OS you choose. Now, that's something.
Right. Now, did you mention, can you cut and paste between the two environments?
I don't believe you can yet. I know I've tried, and I don't believe it worked. So, no, I don't think so. But You can bet that it will get there. This beta is less than 2 weeks old, or at least the public beta of
it. Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah. So, but very cool. Yeah.
And then, of course, your other option is Boot Camp, which I see they came out with just with another update to kind of tweak that.
That's right.
So, excellent. Boy, I wish I had an Intel Mac so I could do this, but soon.
Apple.com/store.
I was thinking in the right direction. I was thinking I could just put in a purchase order and give it to you to take care of.
Yeah, I've got a file underneath my desk for those sorts of things, John.
The circular one. Yeah.
Or
the shredder.
Yeah. It works better with the shredder. It's more fun anyway. All right, so what's your... I think we got time for one more each here, right? Yeah, we do.
We do.
30-minute mark. Okay, go.
Well, you know, I more than anyone just love to stumble around. No. The one I have here...
Moving right along.
I don't stumble too often. So, when you're out in the big wide world and you'd like to find some access points, you can, of course, with your Mac...
Access points such as airport access points?
Well, yes, for the most part. So we're talking for the most part here, 802.11 ABG access points, and of course all the latest portable Macs have that all built in.
Right.
But you know, there may be other types of networks that you'd like to connect to.
Okay.
So this thing is called iStumbler. It will let you scan about and detect airport or 802.11 networks.
Okay.
It also has a plugin here to let you find Bluetooth networks and also Bonjour networks or access points. Now, the Bonjour thing, I don't run into a lot of Bonjour stuff, but I have definitely used the airport one, and basically you just set it up, you run it, and if it finds a network, it will tell you the type of network, the mode, whether it's managed or an ad hoc, the name of it, of course, the signal strength, the noise, the channel, the MAC address, the vendor of it, if it knows about it, the last time it saw it. So just a whole whopping boatload or pant load, whatever you want, of the access points that are available to you, which can be good for various reasons. It could be if you're working in an enterprise and you want to see if there's any wise guy who went down to the local office store to buy a cheap access point and you want to close up those security holes, or just if you're inquisitive type of chap or gal. I can say gal.
It's fine. We call ourselves geeks, man. We buy a lot of leeway with that, so it's cool.
So, and especially, and I think it would also, this is very useful because it shows you some of the things you don't normally see, like signal strength, noise, thing, and also the things that are around you. Like, for example, where I am right now, I got 3 access points that I can see.
Wow.
Now, as you may know, and this is something very handy with this one, is that they have a little plug-in, a little dock option that will show you on the various channels where access points exist.
Yeah, if you go to iStumbler.net, there's a perfect, if it's what I think you're talking about here, the little widget, the spectrum widget, is that what they're calling it?
Yeah, exactly.
If you're setting up a wireless network, this is invaluable, right? Unless you just know. But if you don't know... Wireless networks can run typically in the U.S. from channel there. There's 11 channels, but really the channel number is simply where the signal is focused, right? It doesn't exist only on that channel. If it's on channel 6, it may spread down to channel 3 and up to channel 9, right? Think of it as a triangle, right? And it spreads up and down. If you've got multiple wireless networks in the same vicinity, they'll compete for space. So if you've got one on channel 6 and one on channel 8, that's not a good thing. And you can see that. It displays where channels overlap. Very, very cool. The picture is literally worth 1,000 words, and I'm not going to say any more about it.
Yeah. So, and a lot of them, and I forget where most of them, do you recall? Most, I think, default. Do they default to 6. Channel 1? Or 6?
I believe the Apple ones default to channel 6. The Linksys ones... I think most of them default to channel 6. That I seem to remember that's kind of where everybody lands, which is right in the middle.
When I first installed mine, so I put mine on channel 11 because most, I haven't seen any that default to channel 11.
Right.
So I get them there just because, the 802, you can coexist on the same channel. The technology will handle it, but you'll get degraded performance.
That's right. Now, what would be cool is if this widget would also pick up cordless phones and the like that also sit in that 2.4 range, but
I don't think microwave ovens.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and all the other nastiness. So a great little tool to just find out what is going on network-wise, wireless network-wise, with either AirPort or Bluetooth. In your area.
That's right. Okay, so one last geeky tool since we've gotten into the geeky stuff with iStumbler, I'm going to talk about one that I've been using since way into the past of the Mac here, and it's called IP Net Monitor X, and the X obviously is for, well, it's really 10, I guess, for OS 10. And what IP Net Monitor is a tweaker's dream. There's all kinds of stuff that you could do on the command line with OS 10 in terms of tweaking, looking at, and configuring your network connection. This lets you do a ton of that stuff in a GUI. You can look around you for other computers. You can talk about the AirPort signal, which is, you know, what we're talking about with iStumbler. You can look at and renew and release your DHCP leased if you're getting a DHCP assigned address from say your AirPort router or Linksys router or something like that. All kinds of stuff. Very, very cool. You can actually monitor traffic, which is really handy if you want to see what a certain application is sending and receiving. If you've got if something doesn't seem like it's going right, you can see how the transaction's working. If you say you're checking your email and it seems to be failing on the password, you can actually look at the actual traffic logs that go back and forth and see what's happening. And sometimes you'll actually see the email provider saying, your account's been suspended or something you would never actually get in mail. It would just say, oh, password failed. And you wouldn't know why. Very, very cool stuff. The folks at Sustainable Softworks that make this are total geeks. And I mean that in the best possible way.
I would say they are network gods. They really know how to do here.
They really are. Yeah.
I mean, this is great.
It's great, and their customer support is excellent as well. At least based on my experience in the past, I haven't had a reason to talk to them in a while, at least for customer support. But it was always stellar in the past. So IP Net Monitor 10. Yes.
You too. All you have to say is, do you know who I am?
Well, they might know who you are, but do you know what happened on this day in 1988, John?
Nope.
You don't, do you?
Nope.
The final model of the Apple II line was released today. Do you know what that model was?
Would that be the GS?
No. And I would have thought that too. The GS was not the final model introduced. It was the 2C.
The
2C Plus was the last rev released by Apple.
Before. The what?
The Apple 2C Plus.
Which one?
I said, I'll say it again.
The 2C Plus?
There you go.
Wow, because I remember you had a 2C when you ran the bulletin board.
I did have a 2C when I ran Milliways. That's right.
Oh, I think you're making this up. I don't remember a 2C.
I'm not making it up. And you know where I got it from? I got it from the Apple Matters This Day in Apple podcast. Very, very cool stuff. Very, very well done. I know I've mentioned it before, but I just couldn't help myself but bring it up because I thought it was pretty cool. So it's been 19 years.
Dave and I are both... Yeah?
Right.
We're both Apple II. That's where we got started.
That's where we met. Yeah, that's where we met.
The good old Apple II. Now, just to throw in there, I mean, their tool is very nice. Now, you know, I have a little pet peeve though. As far as I know, it's OS 10.
OS 10.
OS
correct.
X.
That's right.
You did say it properly. I believe if you want to look like one of the cool kids, you want to say OS 10 and not OS X.
That's right.
Unless you want to be X-rated. Now, also, there is something in your utilities folder called Network Utility,
yes,
which will give you some of.
Yeah, maybe, maybe
the tool
half.
Dave mentioned does some of it. Yeah, but definitely not all of it. But it's there and it's you know, free and but it's not that great. Definitely not as nice as
All right, so should we take a couple of new questions? We'll take the existing conversations and put them on hold for a little bit. But I've got there's a couple of new questions that came in that I think we should that would just be great to address, I think.
Hey, John and Dave. This is Katie from Gainesville, Florida. Been a longtime listener and really enjoy your podcast. Hoping that you can help me with an iTunes issue that I'm having. I have an extensive collection of audiobooks on CD that I bought back when I was traveling a lot for my job, And I'm trying to get those CDs ripped into iTunes in such a way that iTunes will recognize them as part of the new audiobooks category that's in iTunes 7. I can rip them into MP3s or AACs with no problem, but they still don't show up in that audiobooks category, and they end up in the middle of my library, and it kind of messes things up. I know at one point I downloaded a script from Doug's iTunes scripts on the web, and that seemed to work because I know that I have some CDs that I've ripped that are showing up as audiobooks, but that was a while ago and with a previous version of iTunes, and I don't know if there's just an incompatibility issue or I can't figure out whatever steps I used to make that work in the past. So if you have any suggestions, I would greatly appreciate it. Thanks for all you do.
You bet. And I'm not sure if Katie said it, but I believe that is Katie from the Mac Core podcast. So, but nonetheless, yes, this audiobooks category is interesting in the new iTunes 7, which of course came out last week. And I dug into the iTunes libraries on a couple of the Macs here and noticed that only a certain type of file was appearing in the audiobooks classification or subcategory, if you will. And what it is it's anything that appears to be a protected AAC file that's not really protected is what it comes up as. So if you have, it has to be AAC, near as I can tell, and it has to be named .m4b. Now, M4A is what iTunes is going to rip it in as, but it's M4B. If you go and just change the file type to .m4b, and then I guess you'd have to re-import it or repoint iTunes at it, that will put it into this audiobooks category and then give you all of those classifications. So near as I can tell, that's the only step that's required, but it's a pain in the, pain in the keister.
I wonder if, I had a guess, as it turns out, it was wrong, because I was looking at it, I only have one audiobook on my setup here. And any song in iTunes, you can say, if you right click on it, you can say, if you have a right button, of course, you can say
Control
get
click.
Info.
Right.
And there is something genre. And yeah, I think
that
you're on the money here
it.
Because there is a genre, and I tried to change it to, because the one that I do have in my directory, the genre is audiobook, and I thought, maybe that's a simple way of doing it, but apparently
no, it's not.
It doesn't just look at it. I thought that would do it, but it didn't.
Yep. And the only reason I know that it's here is because when I create the podcast for the chapters to be built into, those are M4B files. And that's what does it. So I believe that's the only step, Katie. Hopefully you'll either tell us that yes, that did it for you, or no, and it's back to the drawing board. So that's the now I need to get back to where I needed to be in iTunes to address Robert's. Robert's got two questions, and they're interest. One of them's very interesting.
Hi, it's Robert from the Jersey Shore. I've got two questions for you.
Okay.
One is sometimes when I mouse over an object in the Finder, in a Finder window, I notice that I see a little magnifying glass. However, it doesn't always happen. I don't know why it happens, and I can't reproduce it. What is this for? What does this mean, this little magnifying glass? What does it do? That's question one.
All right, you know what? I just looked at the time, so let's answer question one, and then we'll see if we can get to question two this week, or if we just save it until next week, because question two will open up a huge can of worms that we may simply want to avoid. Do you know anything about this magnifying glass, John?
My only guess, which I don't know, I was guessing it had something to do with universal access.
Oh.
But I don't know, because I've never seen it.
No, I haven't either.
And I know Universal Access does have some features that let you do Zoom and VoiceOver and some display stuff here. I haven't used Universal Access enough.
Yeah.
But I've never seen the magnifying glass, so I couldn't say. Have
I
you?
No, I haven't. And I tried all kinds of key combinations to get it to appear, to see if there was something. Nothing. So, Robert, maybe if you could take a screenshot of it, although I know that may be impossible, but if you just do Command-Shift-3 when when you see it appear, that might help give us some clues as to what's going on. Feel free, folks, if you're sending in a question, to, you know, follow up a voicemail with an email, if there's any collateral materials that would make sense. And in this case, seeing a screenshot would be really helpful. Again, 206-666-GEEK is the number that Robert called. And for those of you that know why I'm going to say this, I'll say that the 206-666-GEEK number works just fine. And we do get everything that comes into it. So I think that's... I think that's that.
Well, I had one little thing there. You said that, we'll throw out a teeny little extra tip here. You said Command Shift 3.
Yes.
There's also another fun one.
Yeah, but
Command Shift 4.
He can't use Command Shift 4 because I'm afraid that Command Shift 4 will lose the mouse cursor. Right? Does the mouse cursor freeze when you do Command Shift 4? Try it on your non-podcast machine here. No.
Ah.
Does
you
it?
Are correct, but if you'd like to take a... Okay. No, it goes away. But okay, Command Shift 4 will let you do a portion of the screen.
Right. Command Shift 4 turns the cursor into a bullseye, and then you can draw a box. And you get one shot at drawing this box, and then it takes a picture of just the area you've selected. Again, I didn't recommend that for Robert because it takes the mouse cursor away. Snaps Pro does not. So if you want to retain the mouse cursor while... still drawing boxes and all that, then go get Snaps Pro from Ambrosia, right?
Still excellent. Ambrosia. Excellent. I've been using that forever.
Oh, it rocks. Mm-hmm. I couldn't live without it, but somehow a lot of people do. And it's simply because they don't know. I guess that's it. So next week we're going to talk with Ricky Spiro about his Mac Pro, and he's going to tell us what he's done to...
Really? Oh,
yeah.
He got one?
He got one. That's right.
Wow.
And then,
did he put in the purchase order?
And then the following week...
He bought it with his own money.
The following weekend, we're at Portable Media Expo.
Oh, yeah.
And you can be there, too. If you're going, let us know. And we'll see about, you know, saying hi, shaking hands, you know, having coffee or drinks or whatever. Cashfly Hosting is, of course, where you've downloaded this podcast from. Is that bad English? Might be. The podcast marketplace. This episode, of course, we have the 6i isolated earphones from Edemotic, the A5 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, and TeachMac software from TeachMac.com. So check those out. If you want to sponsor the show, the Backbeat Media Podcast Network is the place to go. And that's it. We're out. Hey, come play Nation States with us at nationstates.net. We are having a ton of fun. Everybody's endorsing each other.
We're rocking.
We're actually building up strength to our Geeks Unite region, which is, I don't know what, I actually don't know what that means, but it seems to be fun. So that's that. And
of course, you know, this means war.
This does mean war. That's right. 206-666-GEEK, MacGeekGab at MacObserver.com.
Always vote.
Always vote. That's
vote
right.
Early, vote often.
Gmail invites are still available for those of you that have asked. We try to send them out as quickly as we can. But if you need one, let us know. Skype to MacGeekGab.
Did you get caught?
Don't get caught. But there is a little quiz here, John. And you can send in your email results to us if you know what this is.